You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody is having a good start to your day. Yes, just like yesterday, I'll tell you, it's Friday. We'll continue to tell you that throughout the course of the day, because a lot of you probably wake up every day and go, like me, and go, what day is it again? Groundhog's Day. What day is it again? It's Friday. It's the end of the week. Usually, it's when you're excited. I'm not sure if Fridays like this feel much different than any other day. Darren McFarland, that's me, down south of town in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick over in East Nashville, representing the east side.
Good morning.
Chase McCabe out
all's
in Bellevue.
On the east side.
On the west side. Very formal introduction there from a formal hello to the show by Willie. Chase on the west side.
Darren, William, hello.
Very formal on the west side as well. Elijah Campbell at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, holding down the fort there at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Elijah, how you doing?
If I was doing any better, that'd be two of me.
By the way, did you watch the scheme, since you're a big basketball fan?
I have not.
Too depressing.
I have yet to get a friend's HBO sign-in info. I need to get that from somebody, because mine expired. I don't have the HBO login, but I definitely plan on it.
I got you. I'll hook you up with it.
That's what friends are for.
Because you would like this.
Oh yeah. No, I've really wanted to see it, because the story is absolutely fascinating to me. And of course, it's nothing like too shocking. This is info that was pretty prevalent. But I'd love to hear the Will Wade tape for itself. For the most part.
I actually watched it again yesterday, or most of it again yesterday. Nothing changed on my end. I just stumbled across it, and I thought, you know what? I'll watch it again just to make sure I didn't miss anything or anything didn't fall through the cracks. And
no. The what? Excuse me?
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. The cracks.
Let's get the dump button ready.
Not the craps. The cracks.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No, don't want that. By the way, there's some – I don't know if you guys saw this, but Tony Boselli has been speaking out. He spent some time in the hospital. Tony Boselli and his wife had tested positive for coronavirus. I'm not sure why we're just now finding this out. That's kind of big news, but that kind of flew under the radar until they really got past it, which that's good news to hear.
Yeah, it's very good news.
Well, I mean, I was reading that they also have been talking about Jim Edmonds, and as more time goes by and the numbers start growing, I mean, this is what I was thinking. I was going to ask you guys this. Do you guys know somebody yet that has contracted the virus?
No.
I have.
I do not.
I do.
You do? Okay. See, no. I think as time goes on, like, there are more names that we know that are getting it in, you know, the celebrity world, the sports world, and whatnot. And there's also a greater chance that you probably know somebody. I've been in contact with a friend of mine from high school that has it, and she is really going through a tough time right now. So, you know, it starts to hit home more and more, right? And that's why it's so important, what we've been saying for a long time. I mean, to our credit, you know, for basically 3 weeks, I mean, we've been sort of dialed in, right? It all hit us between the eyes, you know, the day after I came home.
And
it's been just over 3 weeks now from Toronto. Right,
that's,
and you remember
exactly
that Friday, our whole attitude changed on
Friday. Everything
changed. Right, and yep. It's been pretty consistent since then, but you know, what we feared would happen and what we've been saying, what doctors have been saying was going to happen has happened. So, you know, it's now more likely that you know somebody, and maybe it takes something like that to really have you dialed into how important it is to do what we need to do. But, you know, it really does change your perspective, even if you have been following this along. It's tough. You know, it's tough to know that somebody that you know real closely is suffering.
Yeah, well, I've told people this. I mean, there's no doubt that everything changed for us, for me, on this show 3 weeks ago today. I mean, everything changed, and we have had a different message moving forward for the last 3 weeks. And as you just said, I believe it has been the correct message, unlike other media types, especially in this business, that have been giving out the wrong message for the last 3 weeks. And that's a real shame, because it makes us all look bad. And now you know why people get so mad at the media and bang on them. We all get lumped into one group because of certain individuals who have said from the get-go this was no big deal and this was literally nothing. But I'll just leave it at that. By the way, another sports personality was Jim Edmonds, also testing positive. Right. I saw that yesterday as well.
Well, so, Darren, think about this, too. When you and I did that show from the Kroger, and this was right after the tornado, and we were...
That was on a Wednesday.
It was on a Wednesday, and we were, you know, doing things for tornado relief. At that point, you and I were like, okay, you know, Ivy League had already canceled. We were getting into the could things happen without fans, and I believe by the end of that show, one of the NBA teams, I think, had said they were going to do that.
And, the Golden State Warriors said their game against the Nets on that Thursday night was going to be – that was the first team to come out in any professional sports franchise. They said that they were going to do it without fans.
And you and I kind of looked at each other during a break and we're like, where is this going? Because our mood had kind of changed throughout the week. On Monday it was like, all right, is this real? Like, I mean, we knew that COVID-19 was real, obviously, but were things going to get canceled? Like, was this really going to spiral the way that it did? And then as every day went by, our thoughts changed because everybody's thoughts changed. And then we got to the point where we're doing the shows from our houses. It's just crazy to think that it feels like forever ago, but really it's 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks.
And the governor spoke yesterday, and as we've been saying again, this is going to be a while. Unfortunately, this is not going to be quick. And you know, I'm glad that Tennessee got to the party. Still, other states have not gotten to the party yet. It's time for
Tennessee.
Time for everybody
was
to
relatively
get on board.
Late.
Yes.
Yeah, Tennessee was relatively late, and you can go back and look at news reports of thousands of doctors pleading with the leadership of the state to do what he did only yesterday. But, you know, better late than never, right? But this, you know, doctors have been consistent with the message the entire time. So I'm glad we got here, and let's just only hope that we can flatten that curve going forward here.
Phil Bredesen region is in the books. The voting has closed last night at 9 o'clock. And
I am ready today, Darren. I am ready.
Well, you get ready for the David Poyle region. You get ready for all that, okay?
Oh.
Eddie Kruse, okay, as no surprise there. We had an unbelievable conversation with Eddie George yesterday in the third hour of the program. If you missed that interview, you need to go back and listen to it. And it is out there and available for you to do. To listen to, it's fantastic. It will be so worth your time. I promise you that. Eddie gets 93% of the vote. He beats Blake Jeffrey on. He will move on and take on John Jenkins, who got it done by a slim margin. The 8-9 matchup, 52% of the vote going to Johnny Cash VU23 on Twitter. And so he put out a plea. And he got the votes just enough to advance and take on the one seed, Eddie George, in the second round. Mike Fisher getting it done, the four seed, with 81% of the vote over Marcus Mariota. And then the other crazy close one, the 5-12 matchup. Albert Hainsworth, the five seed, Kimo Tiimonen, the 12 seed, and a late push by Kimo gets 52% of the vote. and Kimmo Tiiminen, the 12 seed, advances to take on Mike Fisher. So there you go. A little hockey there in the second round.
Nice little upset there.
And that one, yeah, that was no doubt deemed an upset. And then Golden Tate, the 6 seed, going against Blaine Bishop. The 11 seed, Blaine Bishop gets it done. By the way, this thing got hairy. Right? Golden Tate made quite the rally. But Blaine Bishop collects 57% of the vote. And he will move on to take on one of his teammates, Kevin Dyson, the 14 seed, upsetting Ron Mercer with 73% of the vote. So that creates a Blaine Bishop versus Kevin Dyson second round matchup. Wow. That's a good one.
That's a fun one.
That is a fun one. And then finally, we also had a great conversation with Brad Hopkins. B-Hop came on before Eddie George. So the third hour yesterday was fantastic, and he got 77% of the votes. So he moves on as the 7 seed over Brandon Wright, and Mookie Betts collects 64% of the votes, and he defeats Jordan Tutu as the 2 seed. Mookie Betts was the 2 seed, Tutu the 15 seed. So Brad Hopkins and Mookie Betts in the second round. So that is the Phil Bredesen region. The final region today. You've got until 9 o'clock tonight to vote, and then we will be down to our Sweet 16 after tonight at 9 o'clock. And the David Poyle region, Chase, looks like what?
The David Poyle region, the Sweet 16, will be down to the round of 32. There were 64.
Darren, evidently not a math major.
You're right. Okay. No,
I'm here to help.
No, that was the University of Kentucky.
That was Kentucky math coming in right there. You're right. All right. The 32. I don't know why I said that.
The 1 seed, Pecorine, leads the 16 seed, Giddy Potts, 95% to 5%. The 8-9 matchup, our next guest, Matt Frege, he has some work to do. Delaney Walker, the 8 seed, leading 86% to 14%. The 4-13 matchup, neck and neck right now. Derek Mason, the 4 seed, leads the 13 seed Victor Arvidsson 51-49 early on in the voting. So
wow.
That is a very close matchup. The 5-12, that we got a 12-5 upset brewing right now, is Jarrell Casey, the 12 seed, 62%. Sonny Gray, the 5 seed, 38%. The 6-11 matchup, Darren, that you have been a big fan of, right now a 6 is winning. Bruce Matthews, 65%. David Legwan, ironically an 11 seed, wore the number 11, 35% of the vote. The 14-3, we have a 14 upset brewing with this one. Drew Maddox, the 14 seed, 55%. The 3 seed, Jalen Ramsey, with 45%. Philip Forsberg, the 7 seed, leads the 10 seed, Samari Roll, 81% to 19%. And the 2 seed, Derrick Henry, leads our 11:30 guest, Tony Kemp, the 15 seed, 88% to 12%.
I don't believe we're going to get 4-for-4 on 11 seeds. I think we're going to get 3-of-4, but could have our second 14 seed win right there. We'll keep close tabs on that right now as Drew Maddox leads as the 14 seed. All right, we will come back. Matt Frege, who you just heard in the David Poyle region, he's got work to do going up against a very popular Delaney Walker. Right now, it does not look like an 8-9 matchup, but he's got work to do. But we'll talk to Matt Frege on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, you just made the list coming up at noon. We'll also talk to Stu Grimson in the third hour of the program. We'll tell you what he is up to. He's got an event he'd like you to know about. And our second installment of trivia coming up at 1 o'clock. Big hit last week, and we knew it would be, and we're going to bring that back again today at 1 o'clock.
I'm going to make my questions easier.
Do what?
I'm going to make my questions a little easier. Not try and, you know, stump people.
Well, it's a learning curve for you. You have never done it before. Willie and I have much more experience at the trivia portion of things, so you'll be fine. We'll get this down. Not worried. Matt Frege is on the line with us, former Vanderbilt great on the hardwoods. Matt, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
We're doing fantastic. So what is life like in the Frege household right now?
It feels a little bit like Groundhog Day. It's getting up every day, and my wife puts the kids through their studies on the internet, and then I do some work, and then we go outside, and they're either playing in the creek that runs through our front yard, or they're shooting hoops. So it's about it. There's not a whole lot else going on.
I know. That basically sums all of us up.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way we all feel.
There's got to be a little bit of down. There's got to be a little bit of down feeling, though, in the Freegee circles, because his brother-in-law, Ingo Martin, was eliminated in the first day of competition, was not able to pull the upset. So, Matt, has the group recovered over on your side of town, though? Ingle's got to be a little bit down on his luck.
Yeah, I mean, we were looking at our wounds the last couple of days, and then this morning, right before I got on with you guys, I checked it out to see how I was doing, and, you know, I can't even keep it close with Delaney Walker. He's running away with it. So if anybody's listening and hasn't voted yet, I would appreciate just a couple votes just to make it a smaller victory for Delaney if possible. We don't need it to be so lopsided, especially an 8-9 matchup.
I was going to say, yeah,
you know?
This is an 8-9 matchup. Come on.
Yeah, it should be close, but it's not. It's not.
Well, the good news, Matt, is you've got a lot of time, okay? We don't close things down till 9 o'clock tonight, so a lot of time to vote.
Perfect. Hopefully we can make it at least respectable.
No doubt about it. So what was your most memorable time at Vanderbilt? What stood out to you, if I ask you that question?
So my most memorable time, I mean, most people probably think that it's just the you know, the NC State game and the last few minutes of the NC State game, and it is, but it's honestly, it's a whole senior year leading up to that point. You know, I was fortunate enough to go to Vanderbilt with some of my best friends, you know, Russell Lakey, Scott Hundley, Martin Schneblitz. They're really my best friends, and our senior year, you know, after coming off a junior year that was as bad as it was, only 3 SEC wins, for us to be able to put together a run to get to the tournament and then to have our run in the tournament, it just made all the work that we had done for 4 years, and especially from the end of our junior year to that time in the NC State game, it just kind of made everything worth it. You know, it was a wild ride. It was a lot of fun. I couldn't have asked to go to school with a better group of guys. Our whole team was full of good guys. You know, after college, going and playing at the places, always hear about other guys talking about how, you know, this was or how they didn't like certain guys on the team and stuff like that. Our college team was about as close of a unit as I would dare say any basketball team, you know, that at Vanderbilt and maybe anywhere. I mean, we were a very close-knit group, and we loved each other, and we played for each other, and I think it showed our senior year and with the way we were able to finish our careers.
Matt, I told the story here recently on the show. Willie and I were an afternoon drive at that point, and we also that was two of the three members of the radio show. George Plaster, of course, was the other, who you know very well. And, of course, Willie and George are Vanderbilt grads, and I was sent out to Phoenix after you guys had that unbelievable victory over NC State, and you guys where you guys were taking on UConn. I think Syracuse and Alabama were also out there, and I was sitting courtside. You guys came out. In fact, I was sitting next to Michael Wilbon, and you guys come out on the court. And I hate to tell you this story because I remember it so vividly. And I remember UConn came out, and I about dropped my phone. And I went, "Oh my gosh!"
Dropped our jaws when they came out. Came out, it was funny. We were all doing stretches. And I'm stretching my roommate, Martin Schneblitz, who is my best friend in the whole world. And we're stretching, and out comes Omeka, and he looks at me and he goes, "Freege, he's bigger than what I remembered." And I was like, "Yeah, he's pretty big."
He, courtside, I've told this story, like, that team sitting courtside. Holy cow. And I had to, unfortunately, call George and call Willie and said, you guys, I know you're Vandy guys, and I am certainly pulling for Vanderbilt. We want to see this happen. I said, guys, this team, this Connecticut team, up close and personal, holy moly.
Oh, yeah. No, they were as close to, like, an NBA team as it gets in college. I mean, their front line, I mean, they had Omeka, you know, who obviously had a good NBA career. Charlie Villanueva had an excellent NBA career. But Josh Boone, Hilton Armstrong both played in the NBA, and they were both big guys for him. Ben Gordon, obviously, was a great NBA player. And then, you know, Tariq Brown and Rashad.
Villanueva. Didn't they have a guy named Villanueva and another guy, the big guy off the bench that went played pro?
Yeah.
Good grief.
They were stacked. It was a bit of a mismatch. You know, obviously it wasn't my finest game. It's the hardest thing for me to ever get over in my entire life is how poorly I played that game. But, you know, they were a phenomenal team. We talk about it all the time. We joke about it all the time. If we had ran into anybody else other than UConn, you know, we wholeheartedly felt like we were, you know, going to make a run to the Final Four. Now, probably wouldn't have done it, but we like to tell that story and tell everybody that we probably would have.
Didn't Alabama beat Syracuse?
It's actually honest thought. Because
Alabama went on to the Elite Eight, and we beat Alabama
that
year.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys would have played Alabama if you would have, you know, won or had somebody else, because Alabama beat Syracuse.
Yeah, Alabama had a heck of a team that year, too. The SEC was stacked that year. You guys probably don't remember, but Mississippi State at one point was, you know, vying for a number one seed. Florida was ranked number one at one point. Kentucky was ranked number one at one point. Alabama made it to the Elite Eight. South Carolina had a really good team that made the tournament. There were some really good teams. LSU was a top 25 team. I mean, it was a pretty stacked SEC, conference at the time, and you know, for us to be, you know, to have made the tournament and to have been able to finish 8-8 in that league, I mean, that was it took a lot of lucky bounces of the ball for us to be able to do that.
Well, just to illustrate how good that UConn team was, it's just amazing to track their scores through. I mean, they won the entire national tournament pretty easily, you know, when you get right down to it.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, I remember watching, Jeff Jackson, your assistant coach, Matt, he was watching them in the Final Four, the semifinal against Duke. And Okafor got hurt, or not hurt, he got in foul trouble in the first half. I think he got three fouls early or something like that. And they basically sat him the entire first half, or a big part of it. And they still are just hanging with Duke. They're beating Duke. And then, of course, he comes back in the second half and they pull away. But he said, must be nice to have your best player sit the whole first half against Duke and still win.
Yeah, no, they were loaded. I would love to see what their career earnings in the NBA are from that team. I'm sure it's got to be pushing, you know, $150 million. So, yeah, they were stacked.
They won by 17 in the first round, 17 in the second round, 20 in the Sweet 16 against you guys, 16 against Alabama. Then in the Final Four, they beat Duke by one. That was the only one that was close. And then, you know, they beat Georgia Tech in the final by nine. But they had, if I remember correctly, they had pretty good control of that game throughout.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, that makes me feel better that they beat Alabama by that much as well. After our game, we kind of stopped paying attention to the tournament after that.
I understand that. Well, Matt, we're talking to Matt Friege, number two all-time leading scorer in Vanderbilt history. And let's talk about the game that everybody does remember, Matt, because Josh Cooper, who was covering the team at the time for the school newspaper, and we know Josh, he covered the Predators for a long time. Now he writes for the NHL.
Yeah,
for the Athletic out in the L.A. area. But he caught up with you, and he kind of reminisced on the high point of the season. And it's still right there on YouTube for anybody to watch. I know Vanderbilt fans have done it. The anniversary of this game just passed about a week ago when you guys came back and beat NC State down in Orlando. Just an incredible game that will always – it's one of those games that always define the NCAA tournament, the games that always stick in your mind. But take us back to that game. First, let's talk about going into it, playing NC State that was a 3 seed. And the first thing that really jumped out at me that I hadn't thought about in a long time is you guys ran identical offenses, basically the Princeton back cut, backdoor offense with a lot of handoffs. That really made for an interesting matchup.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. We did run literally the exact same stuff. A lot of the stuff was even had the same calls. So going into the game, it was a pretty easy scout that we knew what they were going to be doing. It was two teams that were very, very similar. We both shot a lot of threes. If we got anything inside the paint, it was a back door, and then you'd seal, because you run so many back doors, they think you're just going to empty out to the other side, and then you hit them with instead of running out to the other side, you turn, you seal, and you post up there. All those little tricks to the offense, and that was the thing. Like, if we ran a special play, we usually did it coming out of a timeout, because if you made the call, everybody knew what was going on. So the little trick or the little wrinkle to it didn't help, because everybody knew what was happening. That's kind of like the last play where Corey got fouled on the layup. The calls is circle, and it was something that we all looked at Coach Stallings to get the call. It wasn't like we came down the floor and were yelling out circle, 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 it was kind of a silent thing that we all, I would assume kind of like a quarterback with a hand gesture or something.
Yeah.
When they see a coverage and want to, change something, they just give a little hand signal and alert the wide receiver. It's kind of like that. We're all coming down the floor and Coach Stallings gives us a signal and we ran it, and Mario threw a great pass, and Corey Smith with the, finished it off.
Well, here's something I did not know until I read Josh's article. I thought it was a great detail. Because you guys knew the plays so well, Scott Hundley made a huge steal where he basically he knew what play was coming, so he left his man. You see this sometimes in a football game. A defensive back will leave the guy he's covering,
yeah,
because he sees what's developing a play over from him. But he knew what play was coming. He left his man and stole the ball and led Corey Smith down for a huge bucket and a foul in the game. But he was notorious, I guess, for cheating like that in practice, knowing what play was coming.
Yes, he was. So, like, when we were doing our final scout on them that morning, we're going over everything. And Coach Stallings said, he said, you know what, guys? If it's a close game, hell, I'm just going to put Scott in the game. He's going to cheat it, and we're going to come up with a big stop. And he put Scott in the game, and he did exactly that. His guy is literally running away from where the ball is going, and Scott stops, following his guy, stops and just runs to where the ball's going and tips it, and he gets out to he tips it out to Corey Smith, and that's the play that Corey goes down the court and gets the intentional foul called against him. And then makes those two big free throws, standing at the free throw line by himself. It was just funny that Coach knew, we always had a lot of faith that he put together good game plans and everything, but he was spot on putting Scott in the game at that time. All that cheating during the year paid off for Scott there at the end.
We're talking to Matt Frege about the 2004 NCAA tournament. And, of course, Matt is the number 9 seed in our Nashville sports bracket. You can go vote for him. He's up against Delaney Walker in the first round. We've got a lot of great matchups for you today to vote on. So, Matt, I mean, for people that don't know about this game, Vanderbilt was down by 10. Down 10, 244, and came back and won in regulation. Matt, there was one shot, and I was sitting on press row behind your bench and really down along the baseline. You hit the first shot. People may not remember, and I didn't remember until I went back and looked. But you guys went ahead, fell behind again, and then came back and got the game-winning play, which I did not remember. But you hit a shot from the corner right in front of me that I swore you were behind the backboard on. I was like, "How's he? There's no way he's making this. He's going to hit the side of the backboard." But that, it was just one of those days, I guess, where by the end you were just feeling it. You knew it, wherever you shot it from, it was going to find a way to go in.
Yeah, the last probably about 4 or 5 minutes of that game, you know, there's it doesn't happen a whole lot, but I mean, I've seen it from you personally, you know, in the morning ball before, when you just get super hot and you know everything that you throw up is just going to go in. It's just, you know, you can't explain it. You're not doing anything really any different than any other time that you play, but for some reason, they're all going in right now. And, yeah, that play, you know, coming down the court, all I could think was, you know, and it was honestly, it was the way I was thinking the last 5 minutes of the game was, man, if I touch it, I'm shooting it. And as that play developed, it's funny. Russell Lakey is dribbling the ball to the side, and he's trying to make a pass to Jason Huerta, and he's falling as he's making the pass. And all I'm thinking while I'm standing there is, oh, my gosh, Russ just turned the ball over, you know. And then when it found Jason's hands, you know, it was, okay, I got to get the ball. And Jason found me, and luckily I was able to make it. But, yeah, we went up then, and then we came down, and they called a foul on us, a pretty ticky-tack foul to get them 2 free throws. And then we came down and ran that circle play and was able to, you know, Corey was able to finish the game off for us.
All right, Matt, one more for me, and then I know Chase has got a question or two for you. But speaking of morning ball, of course, he's referring to the morning basketball game that our buddy Drew Maddox has been orchestrating for a long time. It's evolved from – it used to be a lunchtime game over at Memorial Gym for a lot of us, but now it's gone over – evolved over to CPA, a great bunch of guys, a lot of who's who that's there. But, Matt, how are the ankles right now? Last time I saw you, you were pretty hobbled.
Yeah, no, we're still a little hobbled. It's a work in progress, but it's starting to get a little bit better. I've had 2 ankle surgeries in about the last 2.5 years. I just don't have like a lot of cartilage left in my ankle, but it's starting to get a little bit better. We're you know, we're taking it one day at a time, and hopefully we, you know, I don't know if we'll be back on basketball floor, you know, actually playing basketball, but just to be able to get on the floor and, you know, demonstrate some stuff to my kids. And And you know, I coach my kids in the Brentwood Academy Flight League, and just to be able to be out there on the court with the kids and show them stuff and to help coach all those kids, it's a lot of fun and it's rewarding, and hopefully I can keep doing that with the ankle the way it is.
We're talking to Matt Freegee, Vanderbilt basketball legend, and. You know, your coach, Kevin Stallings, was there for a long time, and now Jerry Stackhouse just finished his first year. I just wanted to get your thoughts on what you saw to him. I know I've gotten a lot of good reviews. We've had people on talking about the buy-in that those players have with him. But as an alum, what did you see out of Stackhouse?
Well, I saw that the team, you know, they didn't give up during the season. You know, they were playing some pretty decent basketball at the end of the year, you know, being able to beat LSU, Alabama, and South Carolina there at the end. That was something that we didn't see the previous year. I think kids were buying into what he was trying to do. You know, it's just going to be a matter of, I think he can coach. I think he just, you know, it's just going to be everybody having patience for him to be able to get guys in there. You know, losing Aaron Neesmith is definitely a big blow to the program, and if we end up losing Saban, that'll be another big blow. And those are your 2 most productive guys all year, and you got to replace them with somebody. You know, it's not easy to just, you know, just assume somebody's going to be able to take a larger role. You know, it's not easy for, you know, Scottie Pippen Jr. just to say, okay, now you've got to go do what Saban was able to do, you know, towards the end of the year. You know, it just doesn't quite work that way. So he's got to be able to get some more players in there. And then they've got to be able to be around each other long enough that they can gel and be a team. So it's definitely a work in progress for those guys. I have faith that they can do it. I think what they showed this year that they they're the right guys for the job. We just got to have some patience, and they've got to get some guys in there.
Matt, we're going to end with this. There's no way we can let you off without ending this. I don't remember the year. It was either 2004 or 2005. It was a Friday morning, and I look at my phone, and old Plaz is calling. He's like, Darren, tonight after the show, let's meet you and Willie. Let's go to the rhythm game. Let's go check out a little Nashville rhythm. So the three of us set courtside at the Curb Event Center for a Nashville
this
rhythm
ought to be
game.
Worth some votes. And this ought to be worth some votes
I'm
in
saying.
The competition
I want
right here.
People to
people
listen.
Because this is Nashville sports history.
Vanderbilt time. They got to be thinking of my rhythm time, too. We were 2-0. I mean, that's got to account for some votes.
And
I mean,
put up a lot of points. A lot of points. So the Nashville Rhythm had signed Matt Freege, Dante Jones.
Now this was a version for people that are new to town, a version of the ABA that had been put in.
There was wasn't there you had the red, white, and blue ball, did you not?
Honestly, I don't remember.
Did I just make that up? I thought maybe
you
had the red, I think white, they blue. Had. I think they had the AB. I think they had the old ABA ball.
I thought so.
But if you've seen semi-pro, it was very similar to that.
Yes.
So it's not that far from it.
So you're on there. Dante Jones is on there, and wasn't like Adam Son on there as well?
Yeah,
right?
Adam was on there. Uh-huh.
So Ashley McElhaney is the coach. And for all the new people that are listening that don't remember any of this history of Nashville, all the new people that have moved to our city, we know there's been quite the spike in growth, and there's a lot of people listening. They have no idea what we're talking about. But we missed the drama by a night. The next night was when everything went down, when your coach was fired in the middle of the game by, what was it, Sally Anthony, right? Wasn't that the owner? Sally Anthony?
I forgot about that.
And we were there on the Friday night, so we missed it by a night. But what was that experience like, Matt? By the way, it got national attention.
Well, the game itself were actually fun. We were playing against a team from Kansas, and I knew a lot of those guys from, like, high school. Like, Jeff Graves, he played at, like, Lee Summit in Kansas City, and he went and played at Kansas. And we played against each other, like, every year in high school. So to be able to see, like, him and some of the other guys, it was, like, a lot of fun. But, you know, as the game – and I couldn't really tell what was going on during the game. I knew something was going on. But, you know, I was playing, so I was trying not to pay too much attention to it. But then, you know, after the game, they were like, hey, yeah, so Ashley got fired and, you know, you got to get out of here. And I was like, okay. And then – they were like, well, here's your check for the two games. You know, I would, you know, get out of here as quickly as possible. So I did.
At least you got paid. There's a lot of leagues like that, Matt. You can attest that you don't get paid, right?
Well, that was the first thing I did the next morning is I went to the bank to cash the check. I was like, man, I'm not going to give this a day or two. First thing I did, I woke up 8 a.m., drove right to the bank. So, no, it was good. It was a lot of fun. You know, all the guys that were on the team for our team, too, you know, I played against all of them in college and, you know, played pickup with them in the summertime up at Vandy. So, I mean, the games themselves were a lot of fun. And I knew Ashley. I went to school with Ashley for, I think, two years. And for those that don't
great
know,
player.
Ashley was, she was phenomenal. She was, you know, Vandy's all-time leading assist for women. Coach Stallings would joke that he'd rather have him on the basketball team than the point guards that he had. So she was really good and it was a lot of fun. I mean, it really was. I wish it, you know, didn't end the way that it did. And I wish it would have been something that, you know, we could have played like the whole season and stuff, but it really was a lot of fun.
And Matt is not kidding. For it was that Friday night. I don't remember what the final was. I swear, I think I remember you guys putting like 150 or something. I mean, it was ridiculous. You put up.
Yeah.
It was designed for offense, no question.
Yeah, I mean, it was just go down and just jack shots. And, you know, I had just got cut from the New Orleans Hornets. So I literally just drove all night to get up to Nashville. And then we had practice that afternoon, like a shootaround, and then we played the game. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know, from going from, you know, sitting the bench on the NBA and not really getting to play in the games too much to, you know, playing the entire game and just shooting whatever shot I wanted to. It was nice.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, thanks for doing this. It's good to talk to you again. You and the family, be safe, and let's not wait so long to do this again.
Yeah, no, thank you guys. It's good talking to you guys. And hey, Nashville, go out and vote. Come on, let's make this a little bit closer than what it is right now.
Look, if that Nashville Rhythm story doesn't get you some votes, I don't know what will, you know?
No doubt.
Matt, thank you for doing this.
All right, thanks, guys.
Matt Freege, Vanderbilt legend, for sure. If you watched him play, he was awesome. He was a fun guy to watch, and we do appreciate him joining us. We will come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Matt Freege. Good stuff from him.
We have had a blast this week. I got to tell you, Darren, this has been something that I guess I didn't think about when we put together the bracket. You know, we spent all of last week and part of the week before piecing together who should be in the bracket. And, of course, we've gotten some backlash. You mentioned a name that was in that infamous game we're about to talk about, Dante Jones, that I lobbied for. That should be in there. There's probably 15 or 20 athletes that were deserved of being in this bracket in some place, right, that aren't in there. But one of the things that I didn't realize was as we've reached out to a lot of these people, we have come up with some tremendous interviews, some of the best, most fun conversations that we've had, just reminiscing about basically the last 30 years of sports in our city.
Well, and I'll say this real quick, Darren, before you say what you were going to say about Matt Freege. I've said this on the show plenty of times that I grew up going to Vanderbilt games because there was nothing going on. Now, obviously, the Titans and the Predators were here when Matt was playing over at Vandy, but I went to Vandy basketball games quite a bit with my best friend Logan. His stepdad, you guys know as Wahoo. Know quite well. And so he would take us to games all the time. And so, you know, we'd go down and he ran the scoreboard. And so we'd go.
Warren Phillips, he was there. When I checked into a game, whenever that was, and it was exciting moments for me, of course, back in the day, you check in with Warren Phillips. He's the guy at the scorers table that you say 21 going in.
Yeah. So when we were kids, we got to sit, you know, if it was, you know, wasn't a big crowd, we'd get to sit right behind him, you know, right there at courtside or. And then clear the scoreboard after the game and get to see the book. And so that was all, you know, exciting for young kids. But I was older when Matt was playing, and I told you guys in text that Wahoo made sure that we got to meet Matt Freege after a game, after a big win. So it was kind of fun sitting there listening to that with you guys because you obviously, know him well and with Plaz. So it was it's been fun to hear some of these interviews.
I feel like when I brought up the ABA at the end, you had forgotten about the rhythm.
I had completely forgotten about this. But to take people back to this era, and we're talking about, this was 2004, but in the years before, and this is, you know, right as we're budding as a sports city, right? We're in still the first phase of major league sports with the Titans and the Predators. The basketball front had seen a lot of, you know, there was a women's professional team called the Noise for a while.
Yeah.
There were several different versions of some men's professional teams that came and went. Nothing really stuck. And then the ABA comes forward and said, we're gonna have a new league called the ABA. And it was good marketing because people thought back to the old ABA with Dr. J and George Gervin and some guys like that. It sounded great. But the reality was it was just another, you know, small-time professional league. The idea was you got a lot of local players from your area, and you came up with a team. So that's the backdrop as this unfolds.
Now, the original ABA merged with the NBA, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. And that was in the late 70s that happened.
I feel like they played with the old ABA ball, but I may have just made that up to sound better.
I think they did.
But that it was a fun night, and for all the people, if you're always looking for little Nashville history, because there's a lot of people that haven't been here for a long period of time, that story got national attention. I mean, it was crazy.
It did.
I mean, Sally Anthony,
fact, Chase, Chase
was
just
the
found,
owner.
Chase just found the actual Associated Press story.
Yep.
And there's some details in there that I had forgotten, but the, you know, as sort of a way to get some attention, and she was a tremendous player. Ashley McElhaney was only 22 years old, right? She had just graduated.
Well, at the time, I think she was the first ever. Since it's happened, but she was the first female coach to coach a guy's team, correct?
A professional men's team.
Yes,
that's correct. And at age
22,
it's she would have been younger than just about everybody on that team. And so you have that in the backdrop, and then you have the owner, Sally Anthony, who was, as we found out as the time went forward, she was in it for the attention, right? She not only was trying
to jumpstart her music career, right?
Her music career. Wasn't there a reality TV show she was trying to get started with this as well?
Maybe. I remember one night, like one of her promotions was she was passing out her CD. Like, that was the promotion night, like her CD. So I know she know the music tie. I don't remember the reality show. Look, if they were looking for a reality show, that short amount of time that she owned the Rhythm, that would have been a good portion because that would have been crazy enough for a reality show. It was nuts.
So they lasted two games, is that right?
No. Matt Freege played two games.
Matt Freege got signed, yeah. And the second of the two games is when it all blew up in everybody's face. The season was going along just fine, right? They're trying to get some fans out there. They were playing. Where are they playing? Allen
the
Arena.
They were playing at the. I thought the Curb.
At Curb.
Not. I thought it was at Bell.
One or the other.
Curb,
I can't
Curb
remember
was
exactly.
New, right.
Maybe it was Allen. It was one of the. It was one or the other. I don't remember. It was either Belmont or Lipscomb. I don't remember. They were both new, brand new, beautiful arenas, and I don't remember. I thought it was the Curb, but I could be wrong. It may have been Allen.
But what happened in the second of Matt Freege's two games, which you referred to, we went to the first game, right, to watch Matt play and some other guys. And like you said, there was some pretty good talent.
Dante Jones, man.
Dante Jones. And I can't remember if Ronnie McMahon, my teammate at Vanderbilt, played at all. He probably played for 15 professional teams around the globe at one point. I'm not sure if he came home and was on that team or not. But the second game, it was like a soap opera, right? Didn't Sally Anthony fired Ashley during the game?
During the game, isn't that right? I think it was at halftime. Mm-hmm.
I have confirmed they had the multicolored ball because I just found an article about the Rhythm, and the one of the lines in it. Aside from the name, the multicolored ball, and the Kentucky Colonels, the ABA's current incarnation, established in 1999. Has no official ties to the storied league of the 60s and 70s. So they do have a multicolored.
So here's what happened. I'm looking at the New York. This was a story in the New York Times, okay? 50 minutes before the game against the Kansas City Knights, which is Matt's hometown, right? He was just referencing that. He grew up outside of Kansas City.
Remember, they played them. See, this was like almost like baseball because they couldn't, couldn't travel from. So that's exactly who they played Friday night. So they would come in and they would play a team a couple of times, right? Isn't that right? They played Kansas City Friday night and Saturday night. I don't think it was different opponents.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Sally Anthony calls, according to the story,
Partner is calling me. Should I take this call?
If you'd like.
Yes.
I mean, that's an important call.
I know.
But McElhaney gets the call from Sally Anthony, the owner, and says, don't play Matt Freege. And Matt was talking about it. He had started 11 games that year in the NBA for the New Orleans Hornets. He got released, and so he was available. The Rhythm picked him up. For some reason, Ashley says, why can't I play Matt Freege? Anthony says, don't play him. Ashley played Freege.
Mm-hmm.
So the game is going on. He had signed a two-game contract to play the back-to-back games for $10,000, a huge sum in this minor league. In his first game, Freege led the team with 30 points. In Saturday's game, he scored 14 points. Anthony, who told McElhaney again at halftime not to play Freege, flew onto the court in the third quarter when Freege went back into the game.
That's right. That's right. She did it on the side. That's right. She did it during the game. That's right. Yeah, it was honestly, it was it turned into an embarrassment. Like it at first it was cool, it was something else, and you know, you're getting like Adam Son, Belmont, we all watched him, and Matt Frege and Dante Jones. So you're getting this, you know, and Ashley McElhaney. And so it's a feel good, it's something to do, it's on the cheap, something to do in Nashville, and it just turned into an embarrassment.
They
it
played really at Allen Arena.
It was at Allen Arena. Okay, yep. Good call, Willie. Yeah, I couldn't remember.
Then
I thought it
all
was more
boiled over. Then it all boiled over after the game as well. Sally Anthony had to be escorted off the court. She came back on after the court, but the Rhythm won the game, as Matt said. They went 2-0, and
they
did get paid.
They did, and he got paid. Speaking of, who does Sally Anthony own now? Does she own any teams
now?
Today?
Partners calling me.
How's the album doing? Does she got a new album out?
I don't know. I haven't seen any of your videos pop up at all, and I have been flipping through a lot of channels.
Just curious. Yeah, that was crazy. That was by the way, I heard some stuff. I had not heard Matt tell some of those stories unless I forgot. I didn't remember that he got cut from the Hornets and drove from New Orleans back here to play in that Friday night game. I had not heard that before.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I was just reading this, skimming this article. I mean, there if you Google Nashville Rhythm ABA, there are a ton of old articles that come up that are still out there from like the Nashville scene and that one I sent you from the AP. But this one that I'm going to send you guys gives a great history, so to speak. But it was happening right then. Just talking about the whole dynamic with it. I was supposed to go to a game right when things went awry.
We come back the second hour. What do we have an Adam on for? There's no new hockey news. What is he coming on for?
No, there's a very important topic he would like to discuss. Yes.
Okay.
He has been writing articles, by the way. We can certainly talk about what he's done during this pause of the season, but that's not the first priority here. He has something he would really like to bring to the show's attention.
Okay. I don't know what's going on, but Adam Vingan is going to join us to kick off the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.